Hello everyone. Welcome to this webinar on the topic of reducing drawdowns and volatility in your equity portfolio. So today we have with us Rajiv Thakkar. He is the CIO of Parag Parikh Mutual Fund. So Rajiv Thakkar has over two decades of experience in various aspects of capital markets, such as investment banking, corporate finance, securities broking, and more. Rajiv is a keen believer in the belief of value investing. He's also a firm believer in the principles of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. And he's most famous for ferreting out undervalued companies and investing in them. So over to you, Rajiv.
Great. Thanks a lot. And welcome to this webinar. I think I couldn't have chosen a better day to talk about this subject, given what's happening in the equity markets as we speak. And the headline seems quite technical, what is drawdown and what is volatility and all. So let's look at in simple terms, what are we talking about? In simple terms, if when you leave the house every day, a small pebble falls on your head, it will be irritating for you, but it will not kill you. Even if it happens 365 days in a year, that small impact on your head will not kill you. However, if someone were to put 365 pebbles in a bag and throw that bag on your head, a large hit to you would probably seriously harm you. So what we are talking about is in the context of a severe loss in the portfolio or a severe drawdown in the portfolio. Now, whenever we go in equities, no one can guarantee zero loss. There will be mark-to-market losses in the portfolio given the market environment. What we can at best attempt to do is that those losses, those falls are not fatal to the investor, and the investor can take those in the stride as a minor irritation, as something like a pebble falling on your head or like a mosquito bite or something like that. It's not a very damaging situation to you. So what are the measures that we can do? We cannot control crude oil prices. We cannot control interest rates. We cannot control currency rates. What we can control is our behavior and our portfolio construction. So let's look at what are the things we can do to reduce the damage potential in our portfolio. Now, again, as I said, it's an appropriate time for such a presentation. We've been talking about this approach, but in a bull market, even a sage will get seduced by distractions. So in a bull market, every stock tip, every small, micro, medium cap, which has been rising fast, becomes attractive, and one does not focus so much on the risk management aspects of investing. So this approach actually has to be carried out throughout in good times and bad for the real benefit of this approach to come by. So let's look at what this approach is. And a lot of people intuitively understand diversification or have read about diversification. However, one aspect that gets ignored while undertaking diversification is that the benefit of diversification comes only if the assets are uncorrelated. Now, uncorrelated or correlation regression is a statistics term. We will not get into the theory part of it or the academic part of it. In simple terms, uncorrelated means they do not move together. They move either at different times or they move in different directions. Let's look at a real life example. Let's look at a hypothetical portfolio. Let's say if you have 20 stocks and some of the stocks are DHFL, HDFC, India Bulls Housing, Repco Finance, Gru Finance, PNB Housing, Bajaj Transport, Bajaj Finance, Muthoot Finance, and these kind of companies. Now, an investor may think that the investor is diversified because there are plenty of stocks in the portfolio. However, obviously, there's a large weightage to housing finance companies and NBFCs in general. So when Island FS default kind of thing happens, or when the money market freezes, then these companies will face difficult situations simultaneously. Now, this is an extreme example, but sometimes there may be hidden aspects in the portfolio which do not really give you the benefit of diversification. So if you are excessively in stocks of one business group or in one market capitalization, for example, there may be issues in terms of all assets falling severely in a short span of time. So, as I said, to really get the benefit of diversification, you have to have assets or individual stocks, securities, which move either in different directions or at different points in time. They do not move simultaneously to the same magnitude. That is what we are looking for. So one kind of asset diversification by now is somewhat well known. So people intuitively, or most people, do not put all their money in equities. People would have some amount of bank deposits, or they may have some PPF accounts or EPFO accounts, which is more of a debt component. They would own their primary residence, or some people invest in real estate as an investment. The first real estate investment trust has filed its offer documents with SEBI. That issue will be coming up soon. People have some amount of gold, either in physical form or in the jewelry form or in gold deposit or ETF. So diversification across asset classes is somewhat known. Again, a lot of people know that buying only one stock or buying only two stocks is risky. One should spread investments over a number of stocks. What sometimes gets ignored is people go overboard on a particular sector. And this is especially true in bull markets, where stocks of a particular sector are outperforming. For example, in late 90s or early 2000, technology companies were in fancy. So most portfolios were tech heavy. In 2007, real estate, infra and commodity were the hot sectors. So most portfolios were heavy in those sectors. Again, even people who follow somewhat of a passive strategy in terms of looking at what are the index components and mirroring that, even they fall prey to this thing, because if the bull market is in a particular sector or a set of sectors, the sectoral weightage of those set of companies goes up in the index as well. So in the late 2017, many of the portfolios that we were seeing of individuals, as well as some of the institutional portfolios, were having weightage to financials of 40-45%, in some cases consumption related stock of maybe 35-40%. So we were getting overboard in a particular sector. Again, I mentioned market capitalization. So given that in 2017, small and mid caps did exceedingly well, everyone wanted to be only in small and mid caps rather than participating in the large cap stocks. And we have seen how that has played out in 2018. Also, I'll talk about the time dispersion, geography, and factorial diversification in some detail going forward, because these are typically not very widely understood. So, being in India, we only look at BSE Sensex and NSE Nifty. Some of you may know that just yesterday, the US markets hit record highs, some of the indices, yesterday itself. While in India, we are seeing the pain of currency falling and crude oil prices rising and rumored shortfall in tax collection, defaults of NBFCs like Island FS. So all these things are affecting the Indian market. What happens is when you have part of the money in another country's stocks or in global stocks, to an extent, the overall portfolio volatility is reduced. So GST or a demonetization, all of these factors will not affect global stocks as much as they would affect the Indian stocks. Also, in India itself, we have seen, for example, a period of 11 years, 1992 to 2003, where the stock markets went nowhere or they were somewhat down. Similarly, US markets from 2000 to 2010 had close to zero returns. So different countries' stock markets have different cycles. When you spread some money across different countries, you tend to even out the volatility in your portfolios, because at some time or the other, some country will be doing well and some country will be going through their own challenges. However, it is not a foolproof mechanism saying your equity will behave like your bank fixed deposit. Obviously, finally, you will have equity risk. And given that the world is interconnected increasingly these days, across the globe event like a big terrorist attack like 9/11 or the bankruptcy which affected global markets, that would obviously affect portfolios, and there's not too much that one can do about such events. So risk management is one portion. What also happens is that you get a wider set of opportunities. Today, India is anywhere about 3 to 4% of the global market capitalization. So big stocks are listed outside India, and many of the newer sectors that are forming part of Indian consumption space are not even listed in India. So in the e-commerce space, for example, we don't have the Flipkart or Snapdeal and those kind of companies listed in India. The only one we had was probably Infibeam and such companies. So we don't have too much participation in the internet space. If you want to buy shares of, let's say, Make My Trip or Yatra.com, then you have to go to overseas markets to participate in these companies, because although their business is in India, their listing is in foreign countries. So apart from risk reduction, geographical diversification also gives you a wider set of opportunities. Apart from geographical diversification, what one also needs to look at is which are the common factors in the portfolios that we have. Now, if all your investments are in only PSU stocks, if there is some move which is adverse to public sector undertakings, then your portfolio will take a wide hit. Similarly, if it's from another business family in India which is not doing that well, then your portfolio will be subject to that risk. If all your companies are severely dependent on exports, if rupee appreciates or if there is a trade war or sanctions, then your portfolio will be severely affected. If, as we saw, if all your companies are subject to or vulnerable to liquidity squeezes or increase in interest rates would affect your portfolio of companies, then you would be subject to that factor. Similar thing would be commodity prices or having just one customer or just one supplier. So you need to take into account these factors when creating a portfolio so that it's not very vulnerable to just one factor which can result in severe losses. So if we take an example, let's say, of how can you guard against this. Now, let's say airline companies currently, Jet Airways, SpiceJet, Indigo, all these would be suffering on account of falling rupee as well as rising crude prices, because their expenses are in foreign currency and crude oil prices. Now, if on the other hand, you were in a oil producing company like ONGC, to some extent, ONGC may benefit from higher crude prices or from rupee depreciation. So sometimes creating these counterbalancing ideas in your portfolio will help containing the volatility. If some of your companies are vulnerable to the fall in rupee, if you have, on the other hand, some exporting company, then one company will benefit, the other company will have a loss, and on average, you will be okay. It won't affect you that severely in terms of the overall impact on your portfolio. So this is generally the way we think about reducing the risk or trying to reduce the downside in the portfolio. So given that this is our thinking, it is what we have tried to implement in the mutual fund that we run and the way we go about investing. So I'll talk a bit about what we do at PPFAS Mutual Fund, also known as Parag Parikh Mutual Fund. So we run just two schemes. We have one general equity scheme and we have one liquid fund. So in the equity scheme that we do, that we run, we have a mandate of investing up to 35% of the corpus in global stocks. So currently it's about 28% or so. It varies typically between a range of 25 to 30%. What this does is, as I have explained, it gives you the benefit of global diversification. Now, for example, today when Indian markets are severely down and yesterday the global markets were up, that would result in some cushioning of the impact of the volatility on the portfolio. Again, while Indian markets do exceedingly well, and if global markets are flattish, this portfolio would rise also lesser to that extent. But overall, it reduces the portfolio volatility. At the same time, one has the opportunity of availing a wider set of choosing from a wider set of companies. And given the fact that 65% of the assets are invested in Indian stocks at the minimum, this scheme is classified as an Indian equity scheme for tax purposes. So given that capital gains become long term after holding for a period of 12 months, first 1 lakh is tax exempt, and beyond that you would be paying a tax of 10%. So the benefits of an Indian equity scheme are available to this scheme. Also, we don't force ourselves to be fully invested at all times. So for the past maybe 6 to 8 months, we've been holding positions in cash and cash equivalents and arbitrage. This would again amount to about 27-28%. So broadly, on a net basis, exposure to Indian stocks would be only about 45% outright basis. So this really gives a risk management framework, and it protects the downside when there are these severe events. So since inception, these are the returns. So just to highlight, these are returns as on 31st August. 30th September fact sheet is not out, but it will be out soon. And people who wish to refer the latest numbers can check it out on any of the financial websites, like, let's say, Money Control or Value Research or Morningstar, or maybe on Zerodha platform and things like that. So broadly, we have been able to deliver returns not dramatically different from the Indian returns. To our mind, there have been decent returns so far. Obviously, nothing is guaranteed and past returns may not be reflected in the future. But more than the returns, what I would like to highlight is the risk part. The whole presentation today is about limiting downside and about reducing the risk in the portfolio. So more than the returns, my objective is to highlight on the risk part. So the riskiness of the portfolio is less given that the quantitative indicators like portfolio beta and standard deviation are pretty reasonable as compared to a pure equity, pure Indian equity portfolio. So that is the main highlight. You can earn decent returns, earn similar returns, while at the same time trying and controlling the risk of exposure to a single equity market or a single country index. So this is what I had to talk about today, and deliberately kept the presentation so that we have more time to interact and take questions from you. So I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thanks, Rajiv. That was really insightful. So we have a couple of questions from our viewers. So you're talking about uncorrelated asset classes, and you're also talking about geographic and factorial diversification. Yes. So this also leads to a conversation about asset allocation. So there was one question our viewers asked. So if with a lot of newbies entering the markets, how should a layperson go about thinking about his asset allocation? Do you have any pointers about that?
Sure. So it's a individual decision, and the best recommendation I can give is sit with a advisor, sit with a financial planner. So there are these people who take qualifications in financial planning. They are called certified financial planners, and they sit with an individual, look at their income profile, assets, liabilities, goals, risk tolerance capability, and all of these factors, and they give you an asset allocation. People who do not want to go to a person or to pay a large fee can take help of online tools. So there are these robo platforms, or there are online tools available, or even if you don't want to do that also, then there are these rule of thumbs. I'm not a great advocate of rule of thumbs, but the rule of thumb law would be 100 minus the equity allocation, remaining can be the debt allocation. And obviously you should keep aside some money for emergencies. You should have your basic life cover, personal accident cover, medical insurance, and insurance for your primary residence. So this would be a general guideline, but I would strongly recommend at least sit with someone who understands the process, because these rule of thumbs will only go so far. Finally, you have to take into account your risk-taking capability, both in terms of financial position as well as mental framework.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. So this is a very timely topic, given that the markets are in a bit of a fuzz. And this is also the time when people also get a lot of push notifications with very worrying headlines on their mobile phones. So for people who are, you know, getting started in the markets, this might cause a bit of panic. So I know you've spoken about this in your previous webinars. Do you have any pointers for, beginners? When it comes to headlines about depreciation of rupee, crude prices, and general macro negativity?
Sure. So let's take a step back and look at the equity as an asset class and debt as an asset class. Equity, when you own, you are taking ownership in a business, partnering with the promoters of that business. So if you buy 100 shares of, let's say, Tata Steel, you are partnering with the Tata Group in the steel making business. If you are having a debt asset allocation, you are either lending to the government or to the bank or to some corporation, which is maybe for short term or medium term. Now, given the nature of these asset classes, when you lend money, it is by definition for relatively short period of time. It can be for 1 month, it can be for 6 months, 2 years, 5 years. When you take ownership in a business, that is a business which may be around indefinitely. So Tata Steel was started by Mr. Jamshedji Tata many, many years back, many, many decades back, and it's still continuing and may be around for another 100 years. So the irony is that when people invest in a equity as an asset class with the longest maturity or no maturity at all, which is an indefinite business, they have the shortest time horizon. People will put the stock price and the purchase price on their mobile phone app or on their desktops and watch the prices second by second or minute by minute. And people will keep putting money in PPF for 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. One has to flip the behavior around. Debt is ideal for short to medium term saving needs, whereas equity is ideal for long-term wealth creation. Equity is not an appropriate asset class for income generation or for short-term goals. So when we take that into account and we reduce the monitoring of equity prices or headlines, that will improve our mental peace as well as our investment returns. Again, I mentioned the time horizon and the time diversification. Do not put money lump sum into equities, and if you have staggered it either by some form where you periodically put money in direct equities or in mutual funds, then you are not bothered about short-term fluctuations because you are a buyer at various price points. If you have put in lump sum money at peak, headlines will end up worrying you too much. So this is what I would say. Improve the time horizon. Do not come to equities if your time horizon is less than 5 years, ideally around 10 years. And do not put all money at one go. Keep buying regularly over a period of time.
Okay, thanks a lot. So the next question is about value versus growth. So Parag Parikh Fund follows a value investing based approach when it comes to picking stocks. So this also means that investors might need to have a little bit of patience when, you know, value doesn't perform. So can you talk about a little bit so that the investors get a an idea of what it takes to stay invested?
Sure. So value means different things to different people. Now, one form of value would be to buy only low price earning stocks or high dividend yield stocks or low price to book stocks. This is not the approach that we follow at ETFAS.
Got it.
This approach was popularized by Mr. Benjamin Graham, who's considered to be the founder of the School of Value Investing. This framework was further improved upon by Mr. Warren Buffett and Mr. Charlie Munger, who said that all investing is value investing and growth has to be a component of value. So the Buffett and Charlie Munger School of Investing takes into account growth. A growing company with certain conditions is more valuable than a non-growing company. So some of the stocks that we own in the portfolio, some would classify them as growth stocks. So the likes of, let's say, HDFC Bank or the likes of Alphabet, which is the owner of Google. These kind of stocks may be classified as growth stocks by some. What we do while investing is a growing company, we would pay only a reasonable price for it. We would not pay crazy valuations for it. So we would not be in the in companies like Uber, etc., where there's no earnings. In fact, there are heavy losses, but the turnover is growing. Even in growing companies, look at their earnings, their cash flow, and finally consider whether the price we are paying for those companies is reasonable or not. So it has growing companies, but bought at a attractive price rather than paying a fancy price.
Got it. So this is a final question from one of our viewers and a question I am also curious about. So Parag Parikh Mutual Fund has a very focused portfolio in terms of stocks and doesn't own hundreds of stocks. So can you talk about a little bit about your portfolio construction process? Because I'm sure people who are investing in direct equities also might have a lot to take away from this whole approach.
Sure. So it's a classic question on number one, concentration versus diversification. So let's say you have a great investment idea. Let's say you have come across the next Amazon or next Google or next Page Industries or next HDFC Bank. And if you put all your money in that one stock and that stock goes 100-fold or 200-fold, then obviously you will end up making a lot of money. But if on the other hand, that company turns out to be, let's say, a Kingfisher Airlines, then all your money could also evaporate in thin air. So exceeding or excessive concentration will improve returns as well as increase the risk very, very dramatically. So that is not a very advisable situation for most investors. So how many stocks should one own or how much weightage should one have in the portfolio? A lot of research has been done on this aspect. What has been seen is that when you invest in a minimum of, let's say, 15 to 20 stocks, most of the risk is diversified, provided the stocks are uncorrelated. So once you reach a number of around 20, most of the benefit from diversification is already there. Now, buying more and more stocks beyond the number of 20, let's say going to 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 stocks, you will only end up cluttering the number of stocks in the portfolio. You will not be able to research the portfolios in sufficient depth, and your best ideas will get diluted. So just as an example, if you own 100 stocks and you have put 1% of the portfolio in all the 100 companies, even if one company, let's say, were to triple, the portfolio return will be only 2%. So what was a 1% allocation went up to 3%, your portfolio went up by 2%. Whereas if that was to be a meaningful position of, let's say, 5%, you would end up adding 10% to your overall portfolio returns. So that's the basic approach that we have. In our portfolio, around, as I mentioned, around 25 to 30% is in overseas stocks, which gives diversification. Overall number of stocks is between 20 and 25. This is what we typically have over a period of time. And we don't force ourselves to invest just because inflows have come in or we have sold some stocks and we have to buy the same day. We don't do that. If we have sold a stock for some reason, we will buy only when we are completely convinced about the merits of the new stock that we want to buy. So broadly, that is the portfolio construction process. We would be keeping into mind the industry weightages, the weightages to a business group, the exposure to certain factors like commodity prices and currencies and things like that.
Okay. Thank you, Rajiv. I personally learned a lot, and thank you for taking your time and, you know, speaking to our viewers. So we'll have one more session down the line on a different topic. And thank you for taking your time in doing this.
Thank you for the opportunity. Okay.